Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for words and their stories and people in America, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again and welcome back to As It Is. It's time to learn and improve your American English and learn about important events at the same time. Today we will talk about something that affects all of us every day, the weather. Scientists say that we may have an El Niño near the end of this year. That is a major weather event that can cause severe changes around the world. We will tell you about their latest findings. Then we will give you a very important story on American history as we look back 50 years to the 1964 Civil Rights Act. Now, on to part one. Many places have experienced severe flooding after heavy rains this year. The World Meteorological Organization predicted a return of the weather event known as El Niño later this year. Experts say one sign of it is unusually warm ocean surface temperatures in the central and eastern Pacific. El Niño can affect weather conditions worldwide. Michel Giraud is Secretary General of the World Meteorological Organization.
This winter, meaning December 2013 to February 2014, was the wettest winter ever recorded in more than a quarter of a millennium.
Mr. Giraud spoke at a climate conference in Japan earlier this year. He said there is no question that temperatures around the world are going up.
Every decade has been warmer than the preceding one over the last 40 years.
Experts say the extreme heat warms the ocean surface above its normal levels, affecting climate worldwide. The weather event is called El Niño. Philip Klotzbach is an American research scientist. He spoke to VOA on Skype.
El Niño is warmer than normal waters in the central and eastern tropical Pacific. When those warmer than normal waters occur in the tropical Pacific, it tends to increase upper level westerly winds.
The World Meteorological Organization says El Niño is forming again this year. The WMO says the weather event will be fully established in a few months. It is expected to be strongest toward the end of this year and in early 2015. As Michel Giraud notes, El Niño causes higher than normal temperatures in some parts of the world and extremely high rainfall in others.
I'm thinking, for example, the big heat wave which hit Russia in 2010. A lot of research has been done, and now the scientists believe that without the climate change which has already occurred, it would have been very unlikely to occur. So you see, we are making some progress on the attribution of extreme events to climate change.
Scientists have long sought to prove that the release of greenhouse gases, industrial pollution, causes climate change and affects our weather. Mr. Giraud says there is more and more evidence that this is true, but it is difficult to persuade politicians to take steps to cut pollution. The World Meteorological Organization is urging governments to prepare for El Niño and the extreme weather conditions that it can bring. Americans are marking the 50th anniversary of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. The act became law on July 2, 1964. The measure banned discrimination based on a person's race. It also ended racial separation in schools, businesses, and in some public places,
such as hotels and restaurants. The law won final passage after years of civil rights protests. Jonathan Evans takes the story from there.
Millions of Americans marched for equal rights during the 1960s. Their leader was the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr.
Today I want to say to the people of America and the nations of the world, we're on the move and no wave of racism can stop us.
The civil rights movement brought Dory Ladner and Joan Mulholland together more than 50 years ago. They met in the southern state of Mississippi. At the time, state officials enforced separation of the races. Ms. Ladner remembers meeting with Joan Mulholland in Mississippi. She says it was her first experience working with a white woman in the civil rights movement.
She was also interested in the plight of not only my people, but her people as well, to erase this evil segregation that was bothering all of us. I found it phenomenal, and I embraced her.
The young women stayed in the same student housing at Tougaloo College in Jackson, Mississippi. They took part in civil rights demonstrations there. Joan Mulholland says she was arrested 2 times for her actions, but refused to give up.
I learned in church about do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And then in high school, we had to memorize the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Practice what we preach. And that's what propelled me into it.
The two women demonstrated in the 1963 March on Washington, D.C. Less than a month later, 4 black girls were killed in a church bombing in Birmingham, Alabama. Both women attended the funerals.
It had a profound impact on me, and it made me more determined to try and eradicate this evil that was permeating throughout our society.
More than half a century later, the women are sharing their experiences with younger Americans. The two were especially happy when then-President Lyndon Johnson signed the 1964 Civil Rights Act into law.
Students took it to the streets, and the lawyers took it to the courts, and the press took it to the world. And didn't anybody do it by themselves?
The passage of the Civil Rights Bill was one of the things that we fought for, and has brought about a new day, what we would call social change to a large extent, change in the laws of the country, change in the attitudes of the people.
The women say they will always share a special connection, one that has lasted through the struggles and victories of the civil rights movement. I'm Jonathan Evans.
Before we leave you today, here is another interesting fact we found about the weather. Have you ever heard of dog days? It is a period of time between July 3rd and August 11th in the Northern Hemisphere. It is supposed to be the hottest weather of the year. In olden times, people thought the sea would boil, people would get sick, wine would spoil, and dogs would go mad. The heat part? Well, I'll believe that, but the rest? People who watched the stars said dog days began each year when the star Sirius, known as the Dog Star, would appear at about sunrise. And with that bit of history, we go in search of a cool spot to spend the rest of the day. Thank you for being with us. This is As It Is, a part of Learning English from the Voice of America, Washington.
Words and Their Stories is next, followed by People in America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
Now, the VOA Special English Program, Words and Their Stories. As we told you last week, every American state has a nickname. Here are some more of them. Idaho is known as the Gem State. This is not because it has diamonds, but because it believes it is the jewel of the western Rocky Mountains. Illinois is the land of Lincoln. It is named for Abraham Lincoln, the 16th president who led the nation through the Civil War in the 1860s. The Midwestern state of Indiana is called the Hoosier State, but nobody is quite sure why. One story is that the word was used to mean poor farmers or uneducated people. No wonder the state legislature instead calls Indiana the Crossroads of America. Iowa's nickname, the Hawkeye State, is in honor of Black Hawk, an Indian chief who spent most of his life in neighboring Illinois. Kansas also has a hawkish nickname, the Jayhawk State. Jayhawkers were free state guerrilla fighters opposed to the pro-slavery fighters in the years before the Civil War. Kentucky is the Bluegrass State. Bluegrass is really bright green, but looks bluish from a distance. Louisiana is the Bayou State. A bayou is a slow-moving stream. Hundreds of them flow through this southern state, and many are full of alligators. Maine, in the nation's northeast, is the Pine Tree State because it is covered in evergreen woods. And directly across the country, on the Pacific coast, is the state of Washington. It also has lots of evergreen trees, so, not surprisingly, it is the Evergreen State. The eastern state of Massachusetts is the Bay State. This body of water separates most of the state from famous Cape Cod. Six state nicknames are taken from native animals. Michigan is the Wolverine State. A wolverine is a small, fierce mammal. The badger is a similar and equally fierce creature, and Wisconsin is the Badger State. Neighboring Minnesota, the Gopher State, is named for a much nicer animal that builds hills and tunnels. However, the Land of 10,000 Lakes is written on Minnesota's vehicle license plates. North Dakota gets its nickname, the Flickertail State, not from some bird, but from a little squirrel. South Dakota takes its nickname, the Coyote State, from an animal that thinks flickertails are good to eat. And Oregon, the Beaver State, borrows its nickname from the large, flat-tailed rodent that uses trees to build dams. Next week, we will tell you about more state nicknames, including one that is about people's feet. This VOA Special English program was written by Ted Lanfair. I'm Barbara Klein. You can find more Words and Their Stories at voaspecialenglish.com.
I'm Shirley Griffith. and I'm Ray Freeman with the special English program, People in America. Every week, we tell the story of someone important in the history of the United States. Today, we tell about Harriet Tubman, an African-American woman who fought slavery and oppression.
Historians say Harriet Tubman was born in the year 1820. Nobody really knows. In the United States in the 19th century, the birth of slaves was not recorded. We do know that Harriet Tubman was one of the bravest women ever born in the United States. She helped hundreds of people escape from slavery on the Underground Railroad. This was a system that helped slaves escape from the South to states where slavery was banned. Because of her work on the Underground Railroad, Harriet Tubman was called Moses. In the Bible, Moses was the leader of the Jewish people enslaved in Egypt. He brought his people out of slavery to the Promised Land. Harriet Tubman died in 1913. All her life, she always tried to improve life for African Americans.
From a very early age, Harriet knew how slaves suffered. Her parents were slaves. They belonged to Edward Brodus, a farmer in the Middle Atlantic state of Maryland. Harriet's parents tried to protect her and their 10 other children as much as they could. There was little they could do, however. Slaves were treated like animals. They could be sold at any time. Families often were separated. Slave children were not permitted to act like children. By the time Harriet was 3 years old, Mr. Brodus ordered her to carry notes from him to other farmers. Some of these farmers lived as far as 15 kilometers away. Harriet was punished if she stopped to rest or play.
When Harriet was 6 years old, the Brodus family sent her to work for another family who lived near their farm. While there, Harriet was infected with the disease measles. Even though she was sick, she was forced to place and remove animal traps in an icy river. She was sent home when she became dangerously ill. Harriet's mother took very good care of her. The child survived. Then she was sent to work in the Brodus's house. Her owners never gave her enough to eat. One day she was working in the kitchen. She was looking at a piece of sugar in a silver container when Mrs. Brodus saw her. Harriet ran away in fear. She was caught and beaten very severely. Her owners decided that Harriet never would make a good worker in the house. She was sent to the fields.
Harriet's parents were sad. They worked in the fields, and they knew how difficult it was to survive the hard work. But working outside made Harriet's body strong, and she began to learn things from the other slaves. These things one day would help her lead her people to freedom. Harriet heard about Nat Turner. He had led an unsuccessful rebellion of slaves. She heard about other slaves who had run away from their cruel owners. She was told that they had traveled by the Underground Railroad. They did not escape by using a special train. Instead of a real train, the Underground Railroad was a series of hiding places, usually in houses of people who opposed slavery. These were secret places that African Americans could stop at as they escaped from the South to the North. As Harriet heard stories of rebellion, she became more of a rebel.
One day when Harriet was 15, she was at a local store. A slave owner entered and threatened a young boy who was his slave. At first, the slave refused to move. Then he ran for the door. Harriet moved in front of the young man. The slave owner reached for a heavy weight. He threw it at his slave. He missed. Instead, the heavy metal object hit Harriet in the head. Harriet almost died. Months passed before she could get out of bed. For the rest of her life, she carried the mark of a deep wound on her head, and she suffered from blackouts. She would suddenly lose consciousness as though she had fallen asleep.
Mr. Brodus felt he would never get any good work out of Harriet, so he decided to sell her. Harriet thought of a way to prevent this. Each time she was shown to someone who might buy her, she acted as if she were falling asleep. After a while, Mr. Brodus gave up hope of selling Harriet. He sent her back to the field. She dreamed of freedom while picking vegetables and digging in the fields. In 1844, at about age 24, she married a free black man named John Tubman. By now, Harriet was sure she wanted to try to escape. It would be very dangerous. Slaves who were caught often were killed or almost beaten to death. Harriet knew she must wait for just the right time.
Suddenly, in 1849, the time came. Mr. Brodus died. His slaves probably would be sold to cotton farmers further south. The situation there would be even worse. John Tubman tried to make Harriet forget about running away. He was free. Why should he make a dangerous trip with a woman breaking the law? Harriet decided that her marriage to John must end. Harriet heard that she was to be sold immediately. She knew she needed to tell her family that she was leaving. She began to sing, softly at first, then louder. She sang the words, "I'm sorry to leave you. I'm going to the promised land." Her family understood.
Harriet ran to the home of a white woman who had promised to help. This woman belonged to the Quakers, a religious group which hated slavery. The Quaker woman told her how to reach another home where she could hide. Harriet went from house to house that way on the Underground Railroad. Each place was a little closer to the eastern state of Pennsylvania. Slavery was banned there. Once she was hidden under hay that had been cut from the fields. Another time, she wore men's clothing. Finally, she crossed the border into Pennsylvania. Later, she told a friend, "I felt like I was in heaven."
Now that Harriet was free, she did not forget the hundreds of other slaves back in Maryland. During the next 10 years, she led a much-expanded Underground Railroad. She freed her parents, her sister, brothers, and other family members. She found a home for her parents in Auburn, New York. Harriet traveled back and forth 18 times, helping about 300 slaves escape into free territory. She became an expert at hiding from slave hunters. At one time, anyone finding Harriet was promised $40,000 for catching her, dead or alive. The people she helped called her Moses. She had rescued them from slavery, just as the biblical Moses rescued the Jews. Harriet found another way to fight slavery after the Civil War began in 1861. 7 Southern states decided to separate from the United States, mainly over the issue of slavery. The Northern states refused to let the United States of America break apart. After fighting began, Harriet Tubman went into enemy territory to spy for the North. She also served as a nurse. After 4 years of bloody fighting, the North won the war. President Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves in 1863. There was no longer any need for Harriet to be Moses.
After the fighting ended, Harriet Tubman returned to Auburn, New York. She married a man named Nelson Davis. This could have been the beginning of a few quiet years of family life for her, but she kept working. She traveled and gave speeches to raise money for better education for black children. She also worked for women's rights and housing, and she sought help for old men and women who had been slaves. Harriet Tubman died in 1913. She was about 93 years old. By that time, she was recognized as an American hero. The United States government gave a funeral with military honors for the woman known as Moses.
This program was written by Jerry Watson. I'm Shirley Griffith.
I'm Ray Freeman. Listen again next week at this time for another People in America program on the Voice of America.